This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
We're back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples, football analyst at NoleDigest.com, your source for the best Florida State football analysis on the web. You can also find us on Twitter at NoleDigest. Today on the show, we're going to review the Maryland game, looking at both offense and defense, look at what to expect sort of moving forward based on what we saw in the 63-0 obliteration of the Terrapins. We'll also look ahead a little bit to Clemson, looking at what to expect from Clemson's offense and from Clemson's defense, and just sort of do a limited preview here before we do a little bit more later in the week. So let's go ahead and drop into segment one.
I want you to hit me as hard as you can.
Well, in talking about the Maryland game, I mean, the first thing, really the only thing to say initially is wow. That was more than anybody, even those of us who've been very bullish about what to expect from this team, expected coming in. I mean, that's the most complete game I've seen from a Florida State team since at least 2000. And quite frankly, I can't think of any game in 2000 where they played that complete of a game on offense, defense, and special teams. Where, you know, it was a total demolition of really a decent football team. I mean, Maryland's not a true top 25 team. You know, they're not Washington, you know, who's a top 15 team that Oregon just handled. They're not, you know, a Miami, who Florida State's going to play a little bit later. They're certainly not Clemson. But they're a good football team. They're, you know, their team is probably going to win 8 games in the ACC, you know, out of the ACC, out of a major conference. They're going to win 8 games. They just shut out really not a very good West Virginia team. But, you know, either way, anytime you beat a team 63-0, anytime you limit them the way that you saw on Saturday, that's just remarkable. So at any rate, that's, you know, the best that Florida State's played in many years, and it shows sort of the ceiling that this team has moving forward. One thing that they did that we kind of expected going in, we talked on the last podcast about how up through the Boston College game, we had seen a lot of defensive rotation. I mean, rotating every play, throwing all sorts of different combinations out there, throwing all sorts of different players out there, and also throwing a lot of different schemes out there, a lot of different looks, and it really felt like at the time that this staff was trying to get a real feel for what they had, that they wanted to see sort of what personnel groups looked the best with each other, what guys they could really trust when it came down to games where they really needed guys to play and play great. So in this one, I think they gave Maryland a lot more respect than what they'd been doing earlier in the year. And the rotation narrowed some. Early on, you really did see the rotation, you know, on the defensive line in particular, really was down to five guys for the most part in this game early on. You know, you had Mario Edwards, who didn't play against Boston College, and his addition, I think no one at this point is going to question how important to stopping the run Edwards is at this point. There's no doubting that. I mean, he is a crucial part of the Florida State run defense in terms of what he brings and being able to set the edge, and cause some commotion, cause some difficulty on the outside, and also just another big body on that edge to prevent teams from being able to run it down Florida State's throat. But, you know, you saw Mario Edwards, you saw Timmy Jernigan, and you saw Eddie Goldman as your first three out there, and those guys played a lot. And along with them, you saw McDaniel and Lawrence Stample. Jacoby's just played great football of late. I mean, I think he, in these last two games, has really found his stride again and is really playing very, very good football and is back to maybe as good of a run as I've seen of him in a couple games since, you know, he was really starting to play well right before his injury. He's starting to play pretty close to as well as he was before his injury, and it's certainly as good as he's played since he's been in a Florida State uniform. You can see the real difference in sort of his body, in how mature he is and the way that he plays at this point versus when he was a freshman and really didn't have any business being out there. As good as he was, He just was not big enough and not physical enough, not mature enough for the wars inside. And it took a toll on his body. And now you're starting to see sort of what potential he had he come into a situation where the cupboard was a little bit fuller and he could have taken a little bit of a different angle in his career because of not having to just go in and go through all those wars, essentially with a high school body. But basically McDaniel and Lawrence Stample were the other two off the bench. And then McAllister, of course, who was hurt, for this when he was out with a concussion from the prior game, McAllister would be the sixth guy out of that defensive line rotation that they'll add in for Clemson. But basically that's the defensive line rotation, and they tightened it up to those guys. And we didn't see nearly as much of some of the guys that are classified as defensive ends or outside linebackers. We didn't see as much of Hicks. We didn't see DeMarcus Walker as much. I mean, there's some guys that you could see they didn't quite trust as much early on, and so they tightened up a little bit of the rotation, and generally those guys were much better in gap integrity than they had been than we had seen from Florida State all year. And I think that was the biggest difference in this game. Wasn't just that. I mean, Florida State was significantly better up front than Maryland. I mean, it was a mismatch up front, but it wasn't just that Florida State was that much better up front, that Maryland was weak on the offensive line. Some of it was that Florida State actually was they played disciplined up front in the way that they hadn't so far this year, and you really saw the results of that in this game and the way that actually works out. Along with that, basically, what you would do is what Pruitt did in this game is that they ran a lot of 3-3 looks where they put Christian Jones on the edge, where he just is so much more comfortable. And I think so far this year, he's been a bit of a disappointment on the inside. He's not nearly as instinctive as an inside backer as really you would like. They don't have a lot of great options other than him right now that are ready to play. So against power teams, that's a little bit of a problem because you have essentially Telvin Smith, who's a little bit too light in the seat to hold up against the power attack. And Christian Jones, who doesn't show a lot of instincts in there on the inside, that's a weakness. And that's something where, you know, I think moving forward to sort of a lesser extent, you've got Miami, and certainly to a large extent, Florida, as teams that should scare you if you're Florida State, in terms of teams that can pound you in between the tackles and can run straight at you with some physical players. That could be a problem down the line. But in this one against a spread team, what they did is exactly what we talked about on the podcast this last week, is put Jones outside at a sort of hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker position to be able to rush the passer or drop into passing lanes. And then they put the two Smiths at linebacker. So, you know, a little bit smaller at linebacker. Essentially, you have sort of defensive back linebacker hybrid bodies. But guys are willing to stick their nose in there, guys that have the speed to cover sideline to sideline, and have some instincts on the inside behind that big defensive line, the big, those three down defensive linemen. So you have essentially the ability to go with an odd front, putting Jones with his hand on the ground, or go with an even front with Jones with his hands on the ground, or an odd front with just the three down linemen. And either way, you have those two inside backers with the Smiths. And then behind that, you know, they narrowed the secondary rotation as well, where you saw basically PJ Williams, Darby, Joyner, Brooks, and Ramsey as the main five that you can tell they really trust. Tyler Hunter would have been in there, but he's of course out for the season now. And now, you know, the other thing is that sometimes you saw Nate Andrews come in at the money position for a little bit of extra speed. Sort of a little bit later, you started seeing him come in where Terrence Smith was playing a little bit. But basically, they feel like they can cover nearly anybody from that lineup. There aren't very many matchups in that kind of that you can spread and take advantage of. There's not very many places where you can put a guy in the slot and say, well, you know, we think our slot guy, somebody like Stephon Diggs, or, you know, as you come into Clemson, you know, you put a Sammy Watkins or somebody in the slot and say, you know, we think our slot guy can just run by your slot corner. Well, you're not going to do that against a guy like Joyner. You're not going to do that if you try to, you know, get him on a safety and you wind up on Terrence Brooks or Jalen Ramsey. I mean, those guys are essentially, they cover like corners. So essentially you have five guys, really four guys that are corners, and then Brooks, who can cover more or less like a corner in certain cases. I mean, there's a little drop off in terms of one-on-one coverage, but you got five guys that can cover out there, plus the linebackers that run well and cover well. So, I mean, that defense against a spread look is really well set. I mean, it sets up exactly how you would want. And you know, you can do a lot of things in terms of the way that Terrence Smith and Telvin Smith are able to blitz. They're both good at timing the blitz and good at making themselves small and getting through gaps and doing the sorts of things that you want to create pressure. And Christian Jones is a natural pass rusher as well off the edge. He's a much better pass rusher than he is a coverage player from the inside linebacker position. So again, you've got a guy that you can take advantage of what he does well on the outside. And when they're in that 3-3 look, you can see a lot of that with a guy like Christian Jones and the strengths that you've got in terms of your team really come out. So really, if you're a Florida State fan, the teams that you start to worry about after seeing what you saw in this particular game aren't the teams that can spread the field and make you pay with one-on-one matchups, because those matchups, Florida State, frankly, is going to win most of those, even on defense. I mean, they're so athletic on defense, and they're so good with that particular lineup. They're going to get to the passer with that particular lineup. I mean, the best pass rusher actually on the team is LaMarcus Joyner out of that slot corner position. You know, coming off the blitz. So, I mean, again, they're going to get some pressure on the quarterback out of that, and they're going to have, they've got some size and a ton of speed in that secondary to make it very difficult, not guys off their routes and be able to create some problems and win those one-on-one matchups. I mean, that's what the spread is supposed to do, is create advantageous one-on-one matchups for the offense. And if you watched this game, one of the things that was remarkable about it is the way that the Florida State defensive backs in many cases were at the spot that the ball was going to before it got there, before the receiver got there. In fact, one of Diggs' catches against Joyner was a situation where Joyner actually read the route, did exactly what he was supposed to do in terms of, you know, how you teach reading the stem and reading the route combination and all that. He did exactly what you teach and beat Diggs to where the ball was supposed to go. But because the ball wasn't actually thrown where it was supposed to be, Diggs was able to go up and make a good catch out of position, and was able to make that catch because it was thrown out of position. So that's a good example, though, of you've got a very, very good wide receiver in Diggs, who's one of the two or three best receivers in the league, who couldn't create separation against the look that you saw. And it's the first time, I think, that you could see the secondary with it. You could see it starting to click where they're supposed to be in terms of making those quick reads and being able to detect, and discern on the fly what route combination they're seeing and where they're supposed to go if this guy stems this way and these sorts of things. You could start to see them be more aggressive and be able to cut off some of those pass routes and reduce the separation. And in this game, I think that was absolutely evident. And that's against a team where they really do have some good wide receivers. And even had C.J. Brown actually managed to last through this game, there just wasn't any space to throw. And that's something that moving into the next game should be very comforting for Florida State fans. This is just a flat out better defense versus the spread. I mean, they are built with all those defensive backs who can run and tackle in the open field and can, you know, press and knock you off routes and have size and speed. They're built to stop what Clemson does. So now that it looks like they're starting to figure out how to actually play this particular defense with all those pattern reading assignments and things like that, and the various checks to formations and things like that, along with the front six being able to be more disciplined in gap control, where the defensive line is not trying to make too many plays and fly up field, but they're holding their position as they're supposed to. When you start to see that stuff, and you start to see this team playing team defense the way that Pruitt wants them to do, it bodes very well moving forward. Still some concerns. I still have some serious concerns moving into the Florida game in particular, where you see what they can do in the power game. And Florida State's going to have to get a lot better on that as the year goes on. But going into the Clemson game, you couldn't feel any better about where the Florida State offense or Florida State defense is right now, because of what they've shown and it looks like they're going to go after the Clemson offense and what personnel they've got. All right, so let's go ahead and move into the second segment where we're going to review the offense against Maryland. Moving into the second segment, looking at the offense in this particular game, I think obviously everybody continues to be wowed by what Jameis Winston and the wide receivers and the skill talent on this offense are doing. It really is remarkable. I mean, this is the fifth game in a row with six straight scoring possessions. It's the first time in school history that's ever been done. It's just, I mean, there are teams that can't do that in practice against grass, against air. So, I mean, that's just a remarkable amount of efficiency against, again, a pretty good Maryland team. I mean, that's not a bad Maryland defense. It's just that they were a little undersized up front, weren't able to pressure Winston the way that they wanted. And even when they did, he was able to escape and make accurate throws. A couple things, though, that I saw in this one, again, that, you know, need to be cleaned up moving forward in terms of what you would want with moving into the Clemson game. First of all, Winston is continuing to hold on to the ball just a little bit too much, trying to make plays downfield. And there are times where he's just got to come off the guy he may want to throw to downfield and check down. He's still going to have to be more disciplined with that against Clemson, a team that can force him to get the ball out a little quicker, a team that's got a pass rush that's better than anybody else Florida State's played this far. I mean, Vic Beasley is going to be a handful for both of Florida State's tackles. You know, he's only about 230, 235 pounds, but he's an explosive guy. He can bend, and he can get around that edge. And you got to get hands on him, and you got to make sure that you keep the angles that you need. Otherwise, he's going to get to the quarterback. And Winston has to have a sense of where he's at. He's going to have a sense of where their defensive line as a whole is going to be and keep his eyes up, but get rid of the football when he needs to get rid of the football, because, you know, you can't make a living off of the kind of highlight plays where you're in the grasp as much as he has when you're going against better teams. I mean, there's a reason you don't see that in the NFL a whole lot. It's because as you go against better teams, those just turn into sacks. So, you worry a little bit about there being some bad habits developing as a result of that kind of success. That said, he's still a transcendent player, and you can't really complain too much about a guy who just makes plays. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, yes, he's got to get a little better at that, but he still throws probably the best deep ball I've seen of any quarterback this year. Maybe the kid from Baylor is right up there as well. Just seems like he throws almost every ball that he throws downfield is right on the money. But there aren't very many guys that throw the ball downfield with the level of accuracy that you're seeing from Winston at this point. And against a Clemson defense that's had some trouble at safety, that's going to be a big deal. Another thing is that looking at how they used Carlos Williams in this game continues to be very interesting to me. Carlos got some, you know, early looks in this game right away. Was the primary option on the goal line in this particular game, which I actually like. I actually think he's the best goal line back that they've got because of the way that he runs. He's one of those guys that stick your foot in the ground, make one cut, and lower those shoulders. And when he gets moving with those shoulders moving forward, he's the most explosive back on the team, and certainly I think the most powerful back on the team. Even if Wilder, in terms of being able to break tackles, break arm tackles in certain cases, maybe at least as equal, I think when you get moving that quickly with that kind of power, with a 230-pound guy in a goal line type situation, he's probably going to be able to bust through just a little bit better than somebody like Wilder, who actually has not been as good in short yardage as sort of his fan reputation. He does a terrific job breaking tackles outside of short yardage, but he's tended to need a little bit more space. And actually, Freeman's been the main short yardage guy so far because of the way that he's able to run hard. What Carlos does is he basically combines the size of Wilder with that kind of hard running style that Freeman has. And then, you know, when you start putting him out there with that kind of speed in the middle of the field, that changes everything as well. But I expect to see him very early against Clemson as well. And in some other situations, I think one thing that we will see against Clemson is some fans out there may remember, some people out there may remember the wheel route, that little bus route or backup sideline route that Lonnie Pryor beat Clemson on in the game a couple of years ago. I guess that would have been 2009 when right before Christian Ponder hurt his shoulder. It was basically putting Lonnie Pryor right up the sideline on that bus route or that wheel route against a linebacker, and of course that, you know, that's a tough cover for any linebacker. Well, if you put Carlos Williams out there and have him do that, then that's an even sillier matchup. There's not a linebacker in the country that can run with him. So I expect to see him in a few situations where they try to take advantage of what he's able to do speed-wise matched up against the linebacker in the passing game. I think we'll see a little bit of him. They'll come out against Clemson. They'll come out and throw the ball initially because Fisher will want to protect his quarterback by throwing early. It's easier to throw early. It's safer to throw early and force them to have to adjust if you're throwing the ball well. But I think as the game goes along, we're going to see more Carlos Williams in this one than we have in any other competitive game so far. That said, against Maryland, the offensive line was just okay. It wasn't that great. They need to play better in the running game. They only averaged about 4 yards a carry in this one, and against the Maryland against that Maryland defense, you really need to do better than that. And that really, I think, was to some extent on the offensive line. They should be healthy coming into this one, healthier than they have been coming out of the bye. Obviously, you're still worried a little bit about Stork with the coming off the concussion, but generally speaking, they should be healthier with Trey Jackson getting a little healthier. I felt like maybe Cam Irving was a little bit dinged up earlier in the year. There have been some times where there seems to have been some indications that he was just a little dinged, and I know Hart was limping here and there at different points in the last game. So, you know, this is where the bye comes at a very helpful time to help you get a little bit more a little bit healthier, spend a little bit more time in the training room, and feel a little bit better, a little bit more prepared to take that kind of physical pounding in a game like Clemson. But either way, the offensive line needs to play better against Clemson than they did against Maryland. But that said, you still scored. You know, anytime you score on 7 straight possessions, it's a successful outing. But bottom line is that overall the offense actually could have played better in this game. I felt like the defense actually was the side of the ball that played better against Maryland than the offense did. The special teams continues to get a little bit better. They've been manned by young players. There's still some issues in the punting game in terms of not really getting the yardage and the consistency out of the punting game that you'd like, but they've not been punting it a whole lot. So, again, against Clemson, the key is to just make sure you don't give up a return and make sure that you're able to keep field position when you need it. But by and large, the coverage has been good. And I think the kickoff return game is ready to really break out with Carlos Williams and Kermit Whitfield back there. I think Whitfield, nobody wants to kick to Carlos, obviously, but with Joyner back there, you got some big plays out of it. You know, you'd get some decent returns. What Whitfield offers is a guy that actually, I think after he gets a few more returns, teams may not kick it to either guy. They may just pop it up or just try to kick it through the end zone if they've got a guy that can do it. Because I think Kermit's, he's due to bust one. From what I've seen, he's a natural in terms of finding lanes back there, and he's, you know, without a doubt, the fastest player in college football. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes going forward. But anyway, I think overall is a complete game as you could, as anybody would see from a 63-0 score. But the offense could play a little better. There's still a lot of room for improvement from Winston, which is scary. I think you'll see a lot of the same kind of stuff run against Clemson that you saw against Maryland. Though obviously the bye week and some of the things that have been held and worked on specifically for Clemson will come out. So now we're going to move forward, move to the next segment where we're going to look ahead to the Clemson game. Look first at Clemson's offense. Okay, we're back with segment three, where we're going to look at a little bit at Clemson's offense. And basically, I've been saying all along, all year, from preseason till now, that I've not been a buyer on Clemson. To be quite honest, I was a little bit surprised that they beat Georgia in the first game, although Georgia, I think, defensively has not been as good as anyone expected this year, even though everyone knew that they were going to be replacing some guys on defense. You know, they've not been especially good on defense, and Clemson was able to take advantage of that in that first game. But to be honest, I don't think Clemson is anywhere near as good offensively as they have been in the last couple of years. Certainly not as good as they were in 2012, where they, you know, were really a frightening offense. I mean, not only did you have Sammy Watkins like they do, not only did you have Taj Boyd like they do, but they also had an elite tight end in Brandon Ford. They also had in Nuke Hopkins one of the best third and long receivers, one of the best receivers, period, in the country. They also had Andre Ellington, you know, one of the top two or three backs that went into the NFL draft last year. And then if you add, you know, the loss of Sherrone Peak, that's another big loss. So essentially what they've got this year in terms of the guys that were playmakers for that team last year, they've lost four of the five best playmakers around Taj Boyd. And as good as quarterbacks are, really, as a quarterback, you may get all the credit and all the blame, but you have to rely on the guys around you to really be successful. And I think the biggest loss, quite frankly, isn't even Hopkins or Ellington or Peak. I think the biggest loss they've had this year, based on what I've seen and sort of what I expected also, it continues to be Brandon Ford. They're not very good blocking the edge in the running game. And, you know, that's a serious problem if you're Chad Morris, where they depend on being able to run to the edge. They need to be able to set that edge in the running game, and they can't do it. They can't seal the edge. They're not able to block that edge very well with a tight end in the running game. They're having to go a little bit more four wide receiver. They're lining up a receiver at tight end, one of their bigger receivers at tight end at times. They don't have a guy that they can stick out there like what they had with Brandon Ford, like what they had in Dwayne Allen the year prior. I mean, they've had some very, very good tight ends down there. And you know, the tight end position is one that you see a lot in the NFL, where they're making use of the kind of versatility that a tight end offers. Very often, you see that overlooked when people are evaluating playmakers. But you know, the NFL guys know that there's nobody more difficult to deal with than a tight end who can actually block the edge, who's an elite blocker on the edge, and is a threat in the pass game. Now, if the guy can't block the edge all that well, which is where you were with Nick O'Leary last year, and especially the year prior, then basically he's just a slightly slower slot receiver. Doesn't really give you that kind of matchup advantage where Nick does this year. And you know, O'Leary is able to give you the same kind of thing this year at Florida State that Clemson had last year with Brandon Ford, where you've got a guy you've got to account for as a legitimate blocking threat, who also is a really, really good pass receiver in the passing game, and that you have to cover almost like he's a wide receiver. So that's the difficulty of dealing with a tight end, that he forces you to defend the run and the pass. He doesn't tip the offense's hand. Clemson doesn't have that this year. They're struggling to run the football this year. That's one of the things that, you know, Clemson has not run the football very well this year. And I think a big reason for that is because they've had trouble blocking from the tight end position. I mean, if you can't set the edge, if you can't seal that edge, if you can't block on the edge, then you really reduce what you're able to do in the running game, because you're collapsing, you're allowing the defense to collapse the space that's there that you're trying to create in the running game. You know, you're able to basically collapse those gaps that you're trying to create, those seams that you're trying to create in the running game. And that's why, you know, Clemson right now, they're only averaging 4 yards per carry, 4.0 yards per carry. That's good, I believe, for 84th in the country. That's not terrific. I mean, Florida State, by comparison, and they haven't played quite the same level the same level of competition. But Florida State, by comparison, is averaging 6.01 yards. That's another 2 yards per carry. And I think a big reason for that is, again, that Clemson lacks that tight end presence to be able to block the edge the way that they want. They're not able to run block the way that they want right now, even though they've got a pass game that everybody has to honor, that everybody has to worry about. They're just not as consistent running the football as they need to be. And that's without playing a defense that's on par with what they're going to see on Saturday from Florida State. So I think the lack of a tight end has been and will be a real problem for Clemson as they play good defenses, as they play a potentially elite defense in Florida State here. It also hurts them a lot on third down. I mean, Brandon Ford was a very, very good option on third down the last couple of years. He was one of the best options that they had. I mean, against LSU, he was one of the reasons they won that football game, because he was difficult to cover on third down downfield. But speaking of that, they also lost Nuke Hopkins, who actually had the best statistic. He was statistically the best wide receiver over the past decade in college football on third and long. You know, the best third and long metrics of any wide receiver in college football over the past decade. I mean, he was one of those guys that if you need a play, you can go to that guy. I mean, you can rely on that guy is going to be open and he's going to make the play. He's going to make the catch. That's a huge loss to lose that kind of guy, and they don't have another guy like that. I mean, Sammy Watkins is a terrific player. I mean, he's just an amazing player, and he's versatile. He gives you so much, he can do so much for you. He's so fast, so physical. But the problem is that they don't have another guy like a Hopkins that really forces you to account for him, so that you can't focus all that attention on Sammy Watkins. And Sherrone Peake was potentially one of those guys. At the beginning of the season, it was, a question of whether he would be able to step into that role. He hadn't quite stepped into that role, but then he blew his ACL out after the Georgia game. And that's after losing Hopkins and hoping that Peake was going to be a guy that could step in there. And actually, he's more physically talented than Hopkins was. Then you lose him again. And so now you're down at that extra guy. And that's just a massive loss. And Martavius Bryant, he's a good player. He's, physically has all the tools that you would want in a wide receiver. I mean, physically, he might be better than Sammy. But, I mean, he's not as fast, but, he's got that big body. He's smooth, is able to do quite a bit. But he just doesn't quite have it the way that some of these other guys have, in particular the way that Hopkins did. And he's not the kind of threat that you have to really scheme towards and worry about in the way that Hopkins was. I mean, Hopkins was a better player overall last year than Sammy Watkins was. And so that means that you don't have to, that means you can't focus your attention on a guy like Watkins. And they're going to be able to do that this year because they're just not as scared of a guy like Martavius Bryant, in particular because last year they were able to put Bryant, Peake, Hopkins, and Watkins out on the field all at once. And this year, out of those guys, they've only got Bryant and Watkins. They don't have the same level of playmakers that they did last year. Now they might be just a little bit better in terms of their offensive line, but I think more or less they're more or less a wash. So I think looking forward, given that Florida State is designed to stop what they do. I mean, Florida State's best defensive personnel is out there to defend what Clemson likes to do in terms of formation and in terms of personnel. If Clemson could go into more power sets and try to pound it a little bit, I'd be more concerned, but they just don't do that. I think this is going to be a game where people are going to be surprised because Florida State's going to clamp down on this Clemson offense and have a lot of success limiting what Clemson does on offense. I don't think Clemson's going to score more than 24, 27 points in this game. I think, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they scored less than that. It's going to depend a little bit on field position and on, the number of plays, obviously, but I don't see Clemson, really managing a lot of explosive offense in this game. So basically it boils down to whether or not Florida State's offense can keep up, what they're doing against Clemson's defense, and we'll move into segment four to talk about Clemson's defense in a moment. On to segment four, where we're talking Clemson's defense. First of all, there's no doubt that this defense is better than what they were in 2012, in particular better than the defense that Florida State played in 2012, which was still sort of trying to get a sense of what Brent Venables wanted them to do in that scheme. I mean, Florida State fans saw early in this year how it can be difficult to pick up a new scheme for when a new defensive coordinator comes in and has a little bit different expectations of where he wants you, what he wants you to do. That can be difficult. And Clemson and Florida State played pretty early in the year last year. You think about if Florida State had played against Clemson in game three or four this year, then you're looking at the kind of things that Clemson's defense was dealing with Venables as a new coordinator last year. So by the end of last year, they were a very different defense than they had been in the first part of the year. I think they improved by and large over the course of that year. And you saw that improvement against LSU in the Chick-fil-A Bowl last year, where they actually were able to win the matchup for the most part against the LSU offense, in particular up front. And I think that's where the biggest difference is this year. Up front, they have a real sense of what Venables expects from them. They've gotten bigger. They're more physical. They're a more experienced defense. They've got some guys like Vic Beasley who can really rush the passer. He's a guy that can give you trouble. He will give Florida State's tackles some trouble, and that's where the best thing that Florida State can do is continue to stay ahead of the chains. And, I think that's what you're going to see from Florida State in this particular game. Jimbo Fisher is a firm believer in throwing the ball on first down to protect your quarterback, in particular when you've got a young quarterback like a guy like Winston. You don't want to put yourself in long yardage situations where, I think a lot of coaches make the mistake of trying to protect a young quarterback by pounding the football, basically. So what they do, they're going against a defense that basically wants to gear up to force them to throw because they want to take advantage of a young player at quarterback. And so you're running into a defense that's designed to stop the run on first and second down, and then you give your quarterback a long yardage situation, which is exactly what the defense wants from any quarterback. Well, what Fisher wants to do in particular with young quarterbacks is use a lot of play action, these sorts of things on first down, so that you're throwing when they still have to honor the run. And then, if it's incomplete, then maybe you run it on second and 10 and, try to pick up enough yards to put yourself in a third and medium situation rather than third and long or something like that. But the bottom line is here that Florida State's going to come out and they're going to throw the football early, because they're going to want to make sure that Winston's protected in this kind of environment. And they're going to try to take advantage of what Clemson's going to do, in terms of Clemson's bound to try to force, even as crazy as it sounds, given how he's played, they're going to want to see how Winston handles that kind of environment. They're going to want him to throw. So initially, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see, Florida State come out and throw the football initially. I mean, they're going to run some package stuff. So, if Clemson decides to cover the receivers instead of putting guys in the box, and you'll see that check down and you'll see Florida State run the football obviously on first down. But I think the emphasis is really going to be on giving Winston the chance to throw the football a little bit on first down. And that's one way to try to neutralize what you've got in terms of the pass rush at Clemson. Beasley is not as big of a factor in the pass rush on first down and on second and four and on effectively neutral or rushing downs, where those are downs that you can take advantage of there being less pass rush. And I think that's what you're going to see from Florida State. Early in the game, I think you're going to see, in part, be out of respect for what Clemson has up front. Clemson's front seven is a good front seven. They're by far the best front seven that Florida State's played this year. The Pittsburgh front seven's not bad, actually. They're fairly comparable. They're a better front seven overall than what Pittsburgh is. And so Florida State's going to have to respect that. They'll have to honor that. I expect that you'll see Florida State early on, respect that and throw the football. And then by sort of late second quarter, and as you get into the second half, you'll see a lot more running the football. And I think that's where you start to see Carlos Williams in particular, as the defense gets a little more tired, they're going to want to put that speed out there and see if they can do what they did late last year with Chris Thompson and create some big plays with a guy that can really run, that can fly against a tired defense. But either way, I think what Clemson's defense offers is a bigger challenge for the Florida State tackles. Cam Irving has not played up to his, you know, preseason draft grade so far. This is a chance for him to redeem himself a little bit. You know, Bobby Hart has played better than most expected this year, but again, this is a better set of ends than what he's played so far. The thing that you like if you're Florida State is that I don't think Clemson's defensive tackles really scare you. They've got some size inside. They've got some guys that can play, but they're not guys that are elite on the inside. I mean, Florida State's guards and center are actually used to playing against defensive tackles who are better in practice than what Clemson's going to have against them in this particular game. And I'm always worried more about elite defensive tackles than I am against defensive ends, because of the way that you can run away or run at defensive ends, depending on what they can do and the way that you can neutralize them in the passing game and these sorts of things. Defensive tackles are much harder to take out of the game. You can't double them very easily. You can't chip them. They're going to have impact because they're just right up on the ball. You know, I think that's something, again, that's another factor here where, you know, I think Florida State's interior three, especially if Stork is able to play in this game, it should have an advantage against, even though Clemson's defensive front, is definitely better than it was last year. And I don't expect Florida State to be able to generally run the ball quite as well as they did last year. I still think that the edge up front, for the most part, in particular in that interior three, which is really what matters the most, goes to FSU there. And then I think finally, the place where I think the biggest problem is the safety position for Clemson. They've had problems in the running game where they've taken bad angles. They've had trouble tackling in the running game, and they've been burned in the passing game. The safety position has been a major liability for Clemson so far. And with the way that Winston has been throwing it over the middle and the seams and these sorts of things, and the way that he throws the football deep, that's got to be keeping the Clemson staff up at night right now. That may be the biggest mismatch in this game. The Clemson safeties against Nick O'Leary and the Florida State slot receivers, looking at, you know, guys like Kenny Shaw, those guys up against those safeties. I think, and also just, you know, the deep throws where the safeties have to be back. I think that's probably the place where this game may well be decided. If the Clemson safeties don't improve significantly, then I think this game could get ugly as a result of what FSU may be able to do downfield. But, you know, I think the other factor here is that Florida State will be coming out of a bye. And so they'll have prepared just a little bit extra. They'll be a little fresher. You know, you hope coming out of a bye that you don't come out stale. I mean, that's always a concern, that you come out a little bit slow just because, you know, you haven't played, you know, you've got to knock a little rust off potentially. But I don't think that happens here because of the nature of this game. The danger in bye weeks is that you don't practice as intensely in that first week of the bye, and so you lose a little bit of your game edge. I don't suspect that happened here. The other thing is that Florida State definitely prepared extra for Clemson in the spring and preseason, and hasn't had to put, you know, their cards on the table just yet. So I think we're going to see a very interesting game in terms of what Florida State's actually able to throw out there. I think we're going to see some stuff that hasn't been seen yet this year. I mean, we'll see some. I think we're going to see some jet sweep stuff. They definitely repped that during the fall, and they haven't shown it yet to guys like Kermit and Carlos Williams and some of those guys. They did that in the fall. They have in summer camp, and they haven't showed that so far yet. Those are the sorts of things, you know, that you might see. I think you're also going to see some screen variations off of some play action, maybe even some throwback type stuff like what Boston College did to take advantage of the aggressiveness that Clemson's defense is playing with. So, you know, it's the sort of thing where you're able to practice a few wrinkles, and that's really the way what you should be looking for, is just a few wrinkles off of what you've shown all year. So, you know, maybe where you've been running that back into the flat on play action, that back, instead of going into the flat, sort of gives a foot to the flat and then heads straight up the sideline. And, you know, you get a big play out of it because you haven't shown that so far this year. You know, they've prepped for the back in the flat. And so, you know, you're able to make a play because you add that wrinkle in this kind of game. I think that's the sort of thing that you can kind of expect here. At any rate, I think that this ends up being a very good matchup for Florida State. I'm much more concerned about the Florida game and even the Miami game a little bit later because of how they match up against Florida State. I actually expect Florida State to win this game by double figures, by double digits, probably by more than two touchdowns. I still think that I felt that in the preseason that was a possibility, and I feel more than ever that that's probably going to happen in this game. You know, obviously it's hard to project, you know, bad bounces, and you know, Death Valley is a tough place to play if the momentum gets against you. But moving in, I think Florida State fans have every reason to feel very confident going into this game because frankly they're the better team. And because they match up very well against what Clemson wants to do. I think Clemson's going to have some trouble scoring in this one, and I think Florida State's going to be able to both run and pass. And so I think this actually is probably going to be a fairly comfortable win in the second half. If you remember the old Judgment Day game back in 1997 where Florida State played a top five North Carolina team, at North Carolina, and you know there were a lot of people expecting potentially Florida State to lose that game. I think this game's actually going to look a lot like that, where the team that other team in this case it being Clemson comes in, and the game being extremely hyped and being you know nationally a big national concern. And actually it being a bit underwhelming as a competitive game simply because I think Florida State's that much better of a team and how they match up in this game. So moving forward, I mean, we're going to have a couple more conversations over the course of this week as we prepare for the Clemson game, and also be on the lookout at Noel Digest for some articles that we're going to talk about a little bit of what Florida State's doing on offense and a little bit about what Florida State's doing on defense in advance of this game. Keep your eye out at Noel Digest and keep your ear to this particular podcast, and we will see you next time. I made this.